Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of September 25th, 2018. Hurricane Florence continues to affect South Carolina days after the storm made landfall, moved across the state, and dissipated. While initial damage was somewhat minor, river flooding is causing problems on a scale we haven't seen before. We look at the storm's continued impact on the Carolinas. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections instead of watching your siblings bash you in your opponent's political ad. Check it out. Or while you put away all your summer clothes because it's now fall, Carol. Don't care how much you care about shorts, it's fall. Now you have to go and get your flu shot and wash your hands and drink anything with pumpkin in it. Okay, Carol? This is your first warning and last. And now quorum call, Carol. Quorum call is a term to see if there's majority present. But here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the Post and Courier reports that Volvo could soon build another model at its $1.1 billion plant in Berkeley County. Volvo Cars started building S60 sedans this month and has already said that the XC90 SUV will join the plant's production line by 2021. The Swedish automaker hinted at the possibility in an August 16th letter it sent to the U.S. Trade Representative seeking an exemption from tariffs for its mid-size XC60 SUV, which is currently built in China and sent to the United States. Number two, the state newspaper reports that Dan Johnson, the now suspended solicitor for Richland and Kershaw counties, was indicted by a federal and state grand jury last week. The federal grand jury charged Johnson and his top aide, Nicole Holland, with 26 counts of wire fraud, mail fraud, conspiracy, and theft of government money, according to the indictment. Johnson was indicted on estate charges of embezzlement and misconduct in office. Holland was charged with embezzlement. Johnson committed misconduct in office by using state drug forfeiture money to improperly pay for personal expenses. Johnson and Holland embezzled public money from March through May 2017, paying personal expenses with their office-provided Bank of America credit cards. Full disclosure, Nicole Holland is the 6th Congressional District ETV Commissioner. Number three, the Post and Courier reported that Element Electronics, the TV manufacturer that was set to shutter next month, can now remain open after the Trump administration took the parts they import from China off a list of proposed tariffs. The company has an assembly plant in Winnsboro and was prepared to lay off 126 workers on October 5th, citing the impact of a tariff proposal that would raise the company's costs. And number four, get your pumpkin spice lattes ready for some foliage watching, or as I like to say, foliage, even though it's incorrect. In his annual foliage assessment and prediction on when leaves will change color, Clemson University forest ecologist Don Hagen found that the amount of green foliage still visible above 5,000 feet could mean a later start to the fall color change, depending on the weather through the rest of October. So get those UGG boots ready, South Carolina, for some sweet, authentic, really original pumpkin photos that we're going to see all over Instagram this fall. And like the biggest pumpkin in the patch, we've buried the lead. South Carolina continues to respond to the record flooding in communities throughout the PD and Grand Strand. Massive rainfall from Hurricane Florence continues to make its way from North Carolina, which received days of rain and up to 3 feet in some places, through several main rivers on its way to the Atlantic. The storm has caused 9 deaths in South Carolina, and the flooding threat to property, infrastructure, and lives will continue for days. Meg Kennard with the Associated Press and Joe Craney with the Post and Courier have both been in the field reporting on this disaster and join me now. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Meg, the South Carolina Emergency Management is urging people to limit travel in Horry County and Georgetown County over the next few days due to ongoing flooding. The Waccamaw River in Conway is currently 20.6 feet and is expected to crest around 22 feet on Wednesday. That's 4 feet higher than Hurricane Matthew. You were in Horry County over the weekend. You've been spending time covering this story. What did you see? What's it like out there? And what are officials doing to keep things going?
Officials are still trying to block off roads where they think the river is really going to continue to rise and make travel to that whole part of the state pretty much impossible in some areas. There's been a lot of work on 501, which is that main road we've heard a lot about during all of this. It goes through the center of Conway out toward Myrtle Beach, and DOT has done a lot of work to shore up that road, putting sandbags, building structures. There's a whole corridor, basically, that goes up to the height of pretty much anybody's car on either side of that road to try to prevent any water from the Waccamaw River from seeping onto the road, essentially shutting off travel through that whole part of the state. But in between any area in the Midlands going out that way, there are dozens of low-lying communities that are underwater, coming right up to the side of many other roads that you would think, oh, this is a pretty major road. This is four lanes. This is a divided highway. Yeah. And then just feet away, there's a house underwater. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable how sporadic some of those pockets can seem, where on one side of the road, everything looks great. And on the other side, an entire community is flooded over. So there's still a lot of uncertainty as the waters continue to rise. The problem's only going to get worse. And now some people are being told, you know what, there's not a mandatory evacuation, but you should go ahead and get out now.
And you're talking about Georgetown County areas that we're seeing where the waters could be coming down. Even areas in Horry County, like near the Socastee community in that area in Myrtle Beach, they're seeing there's neighborhoods flooding too. Joe, you've been out there and about too covering the story. What have you been seeing? What are some of these towns that we've seen impacted by the flooding waters?
I covered the storm from the Wilmington, North Carolina area, which is a town of about 120,000 people. And they hadn't seen a storm like Florence probably in 20 years since Hurricane Fran in 1996. Mm. It was the most rainfall that's ever fallen on North Carolina. And for many of the small outlying communities around Wilmington, it was flooding that they were measuring in feet. Towns like New Bern in North Carolina and places in Pender County, which is just north of Wilmington, saw up to 3 feet of flooding, and you saw entire neighborhoods that were just swallowed by the water. And the other thing that we saw is that the water needs to get out somewhere, and as it passes over neighborhoods, it also swallows up roads and other sites like farms and landfills and power plants. So there were two pretty big issues in the Wilmington area having to do with coal ash. They had a landfill that was flooded by water, and the coal ash moved into a nearby pond. And then there was a coal power plant where the coal ash water dam actually breached and some coal ash got into the river, which is a serious environmental hazard that a lot of conservationists are now concerned about.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen a lot of that issues with this storm, too, just because of the massive amounts of flooding. We saw hog farms getting, you know, the manure lagoons washing out. Some water treatment plants were also washing out. And you're talking about the coal ash. We also have coal ash ponds off the Waccamaw River down there in Conway, with the former Granger coal producing fire plant. There's one pond down there that's already been flooded. It's one that was not a big worry because it's already been cleared out. There's another one with about 200,000 tons of this coal ash, this toxic coal ash, that is kind of in the sights of these officials right now. They're trying everything to kind of prevent that water from getting in there, from causing any flooding. Joe, can you speak to any of that, what they're doing down there, what you're seeing?
Well, the concern with coal ash, it's basically this toxic sludge of chemicals used in power plants. And there has been no major contamination of any drinking water. I think the public should be pretty clear about that. But conservationists are concerned that this kind of toxic sludge, again, gets into rivers and can be really, really damaging to ecosystems there and estuary systems. So in the Conway area of South Carolina, in the Wilmington area of North Carolina, that is one of the things that officials look at first, is what are these environmental sites that the water is passing over, and what kind of additional hazards can the flooding cause that may impact ecosystems and communities well past when the flooding recedes.
And Meg, is this just like another thing? I mean, it seems like the storm, A, was slow moving. It came in as a Category 1. It came into South Carolina, tropical storm, tropical depression. Still rained a lot. I mean, even the inland areas like Chorale, Chesterfield, they saw a lot of that heavy rainfall. And in the coastal areas, like, we're still dealing with this now flooding and then obviously some environmental impacts. You've covered storms in South Carolina before. We've looked at the past, Hurricane Matthew, the flood event in 2015. How is this one ranking? How is this one shaping up in comparison to those? And do you think it's probably the worst one you've seen in recent times?
Unfortunately, this is a situation to which we're all too accustomed here. A storm comes in, maybe it lessens in category strength, which is basically just the wind speed. It's not going to cause as much wind damage when the storm goes down in category levels. But in South Carolina, if there is a lot of rain that comes into North Carolina, it all flows here. Those estuaries that start up there in North Carolina flow down into the exact area here in South Carolina that we're talking about, entering the ocean down near Georgetown. So as soon as those rivers in North Carolina start getting all of that water, here we sit and wait. There is a lot of attention that comes in the beginning when the hurricane is still swirling out in the Atlantic and we don't know where it's going to go, and it could be a Category 4 and it could be this and that. But here, really, it's a week, two, now we're into our third week after this storm really became known about, and we still haven't seen the worst of it here yet. The river levels that we've talked about, the Waccamaw in particular, are forecast to be worse than they were during Matthew. I've talked to innumerable families who lost everything 2 years ago. They've just now gotten things back into a livable situation, and they've lost it all again. So yes, the devastation that we're already seeing and will continue to see over the next week here in some areas will be worse than Matthew, and in some areas there may not be communities that come back at all.
And we're seeing some of that similar flooding like we saw in the Nichols area in Hurricane Matthew. Now again, they're flooded out there too. So there's still remains to be seen the amount of the damage there, but we've seen it from the air. We've seen photos and just firsthand accounts from the governor and other officials just about how bad it is there with water getting to the town hall, which didn't happen
right
during Hurricane Matthew, but it did during Hurricane Florence. But Meg, you were flying around in a helicopter last week with Governor McMaster, which actually led to a very interesting story about two lives being saved.
Sometimes in these situations, there's no way to get to a place unless you go to it by air or put in a boat nearby. And Governor McMaster wanted to see firsthand some of the places that were among the first to be really impacted by all this floodwater. So we flew from Columbia up toward the PD, Chesterfield County, Marlboro County, Florence County, Dillon County, all of the areas in the northeastern part of the state that have been some of the most heavily impacted. We already saw a lot of water coming into the Nichols area, which now, as you mentioned, is completely underwater, worse than it was 2 years ago. And in many other farming communities that are already low-lying and used to accumulating a lot of rainwater, many of them are devastated. And we've already heard some estimates about the crop damage in those parts of the state, what that's going to do. But while we were flying over with the Chesterfield County Sheriff to get a bird's eye view of what was going on, we came across two men who were stranded on the top of their truck. These are the kind of images that we see a lot from network coverage of, you know, their news helicopters flying over similar situations. We happened upon it just like it you see it on television. And because we had the sheriff, he radioed down to the ground, was able to dispatch a boat rescue crew to come and get those men who really had been one of the countless groups of people that you hear about in these kinds of situations. They were riding down a road, the water came up quickly, and they had nowhere to go but the top of their vehicle. It's real life, and it's scary, and it happens very, very fast. Thankfully, in this situation, because of us already being in a helicopter and having law enforcement on board, they were able to get some help for them.
But sadly, you also covered a different situation that did not result in a good ending. You want to talk about that situation in Horry County?
Sure. Last week, there was a transport van being driven by two Horry County Sheriff's deputies taking what were originally called inmates and then called detainees through this low-lying, flood-infested area of the state toward other parts. We learned initially that this van had been swept away in very rising water, just like what we observed from the helicopter, and that two women in the back drowned. They were not able to get out of the van. The deputies driving the van were able to get out, got on top, called for help, and were rescued. But the women that they were transporting drowned likely a very scary and a very horrible death. We learned later that these two women were not inmates. They weren't really even detainees. They were mental health patients who were under a court order being transported by the deputies to mental health facilities in a different part of the state. There are multiple ongoing investigations into all of the circumstances surrounding this, primarily among them, why did they get on that road that was barricaded, as we learned from the sheriff. These two deputies drove around a barricade, just like we're all told not to do. Why were they on that road at that time leading into evening? This all happened at about 6 p.m. in a very dangerous part of the state. So unfortunately, that is a very tragic circumstance that has come through all of this. And there are a lot of remaining questions as to how it happened in the first place.
So just one of, again, two of the nine people that we've discussed being fatalities as a result of this storm. And I know turn around, don't drown. They tell you that all the time, and it seems to be kind of jarring to see that law enforcement officials not following that message that is constantly hammered out to the public.
It is.
On these situations. We did see that the President Donald Trump did declare the state of South Carolina in 8 counties disaster areas: Berkeley, Charleston, Dorchester, Georgetown, Horry, Marion, Orangeburg, and Williamsburg. And then residents in Dillon, Horry, Marion, and Marlboro will also be able to apply for individual assistance. We did see the president tour Conway on last Wednesday. Joe, were you part of any of that coverage? I know the Post and Courier had a few reporters out there trying to get some details. It was a pretty tight-lipped event. There was no local press coverage on that. Even the traveling press that came with the president were kind of in the dark a good bit of the time from what I heard. So anything from the Post and Courier's coverage on that event?
Well, I believe he visited a community in North Carolina and South Carolina. And in general, our newspaper and I think other news organizations are shifting to covering a lot of the recovery efforts now in North Carolina and South Carolina. The Post and Courier on Sunday published a front page article discussing how South Carolina considers this issue moving forward. You talked about federal assistance. So tens of thousands of people are already signed up for FEMA assistance in the Carolinas. And part of the issue that the Post and Courier reported on moving forward is how coastal communities in South Carolina make decisions on what you can build along the coast and how much you can build. Because we're people, we like the water, we like building things near the water, but the more we do that, the more impervious pavement that we create and the more flooding we enable. And as Charleston and other communities try to address that issue, more storms keep pounding us. And as climate change warms the air, there's more moisture in the air and more rain falls. And we've seen, 3 or 4 historic storms in the past 5 years? That's not a coincidence. It's going to keep happening more often. So I think that's something else the state is going to address moving forward. And that's probably including local leaders, state leaders, and federal officials.
We'll be looking forward to next session in the legislature. And Joe, just you got that in my mind, and I was talking to people. I was down in Charleston over the weekend, and we just kept saying, could you imagine if Wilmington happened in Charleston? I mean, you've been to both places. You were there in Wilmington.
And that's a really great point, because Wilmington is such a similar city to Charleston. It's the oldest city in North Carolina. It's an historic downtown district right on the water. It's famous for its waterfronts. And one of the local leaders there, before the storm hit, they said, we are an area that is surrounded by water, just like Charleston. And worst case scenario, didn't exactly happen in Wilmington. They didn't get the direct hit of a Category 4 or 5 storm, mm-hmm. with the wind damage that would have enabled probably even more storm surge in that area. But I think Charleston holds that same fear. Like, is that city really prepared for a storm like that? And are we thinking about these kinds of things more seriously now that we know that really, really powerful storms might be more common in the next 5 to 10 years?
Meg, what do you think about Charleston and just its potential for such flooding? I mean, if we had that Category 4 heading right for us, and you know, that was the nightmare scenario, that we were going to have this intense storm on the front end and then having all that flooding again coming on the back end, whereas now we're just really dealing with that flooding since damage from the actual storm itself was somewhat minor.
Those images that we all remember looking at, seeing some people live through from Hugo and the very destructive high category storms that pushed buildings into each other, knocked others down entirely, that sort of devastation and destruction is what tends to be remembered in history books and the pictures if you want to just look up, oh, what happened during this storm? If that did happen to Charleston again, of course, that would be devastating. There's city has already been through over the past centuries earthquakes and other natural disaster tragedies that only, little by little just chip away in terms of American history, ancient structure of that city. It's one of the oldest ones we've got. So, I think that there is going to be a lot of introspection from local leaders in that area. Okay, we made it through this time. There wasn't a whole lot of damage here, but we can't get complacent. And a lot of people didn't evacuate Charleston as that storm tended to switch around and lessen in category and maybe go up toward Wilmington. It didn't look like Charleston was going to have a lot of problems, so a lot of people stayed. So the next storm that comes through, it's going to be on the part of those local leaders to continue to stress, you can't get complacent. You may have to just, even though it spared us last time, you can't forget what it could do. There is no amount of preparation that's going to make any place completely safe from any potential damage of a destructive storm like this one could have been for Charleston. But at least now they do have a little bit of time and thankfully no damage really to have to clean up, so they can be looking toward that next time and trying to prepare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just because the whole state for the most part was in that cone of uncertainty, and like they said, don't follow the direct track, follow the cone, see what's in there.
Right.
And then there was that time when it did start to shift more south, and it did, there was always that worry about affecting Virginia more and northern North Carolina, whereas now it started to come a little bit more south. So people did kind of get a little freaked out at that point. And the lanes were already reversed. There was evacuation orders already underway. A lot of people criticized the governor and a lot of other officials for jumping the gun so quickly. But I think they were always aware that this could always change. So they're looking out for the people. They're saying, hey, they're looking at these models. We know what's going to happen, possibly. So here's how you should probably react to it. So, I mean, is there any – I don't think there's been any real backlash from – that perspective now that we've gone through all that. I mean, sometimes there is initially, but...
Sure, but here's the thing. We're still going through it.
Yeah.
And so I think that a lot of the people who maybe would be levying that criticism on, well, we didn't prepare the correct way, they're still holding back a bit because South Carolina is still very much going through all of this. Governor McMaster had the ability to look back on the way that he handled last year when tropical storms came at South Carolina, and also the previous 2 years of Nikki Haley's administration. She kind of set that precedent in recent history to reverse those lanes, to go ahead and get people away from the coast when it looks like something horrible is headed our way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that that's the right thing to do necessarily every single time that there is some sort of tropical weather event. But we have seen that, you know, that's a recent precedent. That's something that South Carolina kind of has started to do. And in some instances, when these storms can be so uncertain, some would argue that there's no amount of precaution that would be too much. Obviously, it is expensive. There are a lot of restrictions and funds that have to be dealt with when you're doing something like reversing a major interstate. But Governor McMaster hammered home time and time again, he didn't want to risk a single South Carolina life if he didn't have to. And when it did look like this storm could come in at Wilmington, maybe hang out in the Myrtle Beach area, and then perhaps go down the entire coast, that just wasn't a risk that he was willing to run.
Mm-hmm. And just kind of wrapping up, we're still getting the numbers together for this storm. The governor's office did release a figure about $1.2 billion estimate. And that includes $125 million estimated for loss in agriculture. AP quoted a preliminary Moody's analytics estimate saying that Florence has caused $40 billion in damage overall as a storm, and that's including $4 billion in lost economic output. So a lot of numbers still flying around. Congress is actually starting to look at a $1.7 billion bill for aid and recovery efforts from Florence. And obviously, we're going to be incurring costs going forward. So there's a lot to be remain to be seen with this storm. Any final thoughts you guys had on the storm as we wrap out here?
So I think the $50 billion was the high number, and if that holds true, it'd be one of the 10 most destructive hurricanes on record.
Mm-hmm.
The second most destructive hurricane on record was Harvey last year.
Mm-hmm.
Katrina is number one, 12 years ago. These storms are going to keep happening. So I think that is the discussion moving forward, is South Carolina needs to understand that and address whatever kind of local state protections that government leaders can do to keep people safe and keep our property safe.
Kind of keeping that front of mind when we come back in January, and even though we kind of forget sometimes, you know, oh, hurricane street season's over, we don't have to worry about this, but remember, it's been happening for several years now. Megan, any final thoughts on this?
There's been some conversation popping up about, well, what about a hurricane tax? This is, you know, we live in South Carolina. It's a beautiful place. There's a lovely coast. Like Joe was saying, we love to live near the water and build on it and all that kind of good stuff. But when there's tropical weather events, that doesn't end up being such a good idea to be so close to the water. Is that something that we as South Carolinians or anyone in a coastal community in this part of the country, is that something that we accept? Is that something that we should pay more for in the event that our communities are damaged by something like this? That may be something that we see come up as well.
Great. Well, Meg and Joe, thank you guys so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And continue to follow the news from the Associated Press, the Post and Courier, and us on SC Public Radio as this slow-moving disaster continues to unfold. Welcome back to the Campaign Trail, the portion of our show where we give you a quick overview of the latest news from the campaign trail. Now, not to make light of anyone's situation, but there is a lot of weather out there, and I think we're going to have to ford the river this week. And speaking of, Republican Governor Henry McMaster and Democratic gubernatorial candidate James Smith have resumed campaigning following a brief timeout due to Hurricane Florence. While the hurricane has passed, the enormity of the aftermath is still forthcoming, but one gubernatorial candidate is already using the storm on the trail. James Smith is knocking McMaster over infrastructure issues from flooding as a result of what he says is McMaster's failed leadership and lack of support for the gas tax increase last year. The state newspaper said McMaster's campaign said Smith is politicizing a natural disaster that has claimed 9 lives in South Carolina so far. And Republican South Carolina Congressman Ralph Norman made headlines again for his brash approach to politicking, this time for making a joke about sexual assault. The off-color joke in which he says Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg came out and said she was groped by Abraham Lincoln was an attempt to make light of the drama surrounding Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh's past accusation of sexual assault, an allegation which he denies, from Christine Blasey Ford. The Post and Courier reported that Norman's remark came during a Kiwanis Club debate against Democrat Archie Parnell for the 5th Congressional District. Now, you may remember Norman brandished his own loaded pistol in an event in April to prove that guns are safe with people who know how to use them. The Post and Courier reports that former Vice President Joe Biden will headline a fundraiser for South Carolina Democratic gubernatorial candidate James Smith on Wednesday in Charleston. Biden also could take part in an event with 1st District Democratic congressional candidate Joe Cunningham. He just endorsed Cunningham last week. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government, named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers use when speaking to each other. South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is back, Did You Know?, with some more state trivia that I probably don't know. I have yet to answer one of these correctly, but my luck may change this week. Russ, welcome back.
This could be the week, we will maintain the easy vein that we've been in for this this year's season.
So easy that everyone has said that they have not gotten some of these answers right. But they're easy. They're easy. Go ahead, Russ. Give me your best shot.
Well, let's talk about rivers. Rivers have actually been in the news a lot this week, as you can attest to. So my question is, what is the largest river system in South Carolina? Now, not talking about miles or length, but volume. Water that is drained through the state river systems to the Atlantic Ocean. A, the Savannah River System. B, the PD River System. C, Edisto River System. D, Santee River System.
You know, I'm such a PD fan since I worked in Florence for 4 years. Respect that river. Savannah, obviously, big river system, and I feel like it could be a sleeper situation here where we're thinking, oh, let's get Gavin to think of the PD River instead of the Savannah River. I don't know. When you talk about the PD, are you just talking about one river? Or are you talking about
the river basins? System.
Okay, so basins.
There's been a lot. Correct. Okay. There's been a lot of talk lately about the PD River Basin, and you're talking, you know, 4 or 5 rivers.
Well, you know, I'm going to go with where my heart is. And where my heart was. And I'm going to go with the great PD, the PD River System, even though I feel like that's an easy answer and a gotcha question from you, because I know how much you love to get me on these things.
No gotcha questions, but the answer is D, the Santee River System.
Uh-huh.
Santee River System drains 40% of the state of South Carolina. It's the headwaters of the Santee River System. They all start in North Carolina with the Saluda, the Broad, the Catawba Rivers. They make their way to Columbia or just below Columbia. Saluda and the Broad become the Congaree at Columbia. The Catawba becomes the Watery at Lake Watery. The Congaree and the Watery, you know, hip bone connected to the leg bone. The Congaree and Watery, you know, become the Santee.
Yeah.
Although in the early 1900s, with the construction of the Santee Cooper Lakes, Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, that pretty much changed things. But that's still the Santee River Basin, which is the largest in the state. Mm-hmm. The Savannah may be larger, but bear in mind, most of that is actually in the state of Georgia, as far as the drainage from the system.
Yeah. Well, terrific. That's absolutely terrific, Russ. Very interesting, and some good river knowledge from our our resident quizmaster, Russ McKinney. Thanks, Russ.
You're welcome.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org, listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio, and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. or Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. And search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at @scledepod. That's at @scledepod. And you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at @scledepod. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to sclead@scetv.org. Or just DM us on @scledepod on Twitter. Or Instagram, whatever. No. South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Caitlin Park is our social media consultant. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on September 24th, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening. Message. Wash your hands, Carol.